Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Runaways. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here tonight with Dante, Evan, and Isabella. Hello, everybody.
What up, party people?
Hello.
And we're going to discuss episodes, is it 7, 8, and 9? 7, 8, and 9 of Marvel's Runaways, which is airing on Hulu as weekly released episodes. So these episodes, 7, Refraction, 8, Tsunami, and 9, Doomsday, take us up to the penultimate episode for the season. So we have one more episode, episode 10, which will be the finale that we will record our final episode on next week. So, we've got a lot to cover here, guys.
We've got so much to cover.
Because if we thought it was moving kind of slowly before...
It's not anymore.
It's not moving slowly now.
No, finally.
Definitely.
And I will say, it still felt like in episode 7, it still felt like it was moving too slowly. It didn't really pick up until like halfway through episode 8 for me.
Yeah, it sort of like hit the runway and then took off.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden everything was happening and you're just like, what? Where did everything go?
I really wish I would have had enough time to watch episode 9 again. I didn't. I was able to watch 7 and 8 twice, but I didn't get down to 9 again. So
Yeah. I was very fortunate because my brother was visiting for Christmas and stayed until New Year's, and he said to me, "Hey, Dante, do you want to go ahead and watch this show called Runaways?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, I do."
You had to rewatch the whole thing with him.
We marathon nice. 9 episodes in 2 days.
Nice. Beautiful.
So yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So,
all right.
That's why I got to watch them all twice.
Let's for the episode, let's do a quick recap of major plot points. Not going too in depth, but just kind of hitting the big ones if we can, and then we have some questions we're going to use for discussion at the end.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'll let Dante's in the driver's wheel. Driver's seat. Sorry.
Oh God, I was so punchy when I took these notes because it was at the end of a 5-episode bender. So my apologies if they are if they're weird.
Well, it's just funny because I was reading through them and then there's one line in Doomsday that's feelings, so many feelings. Oh my God, feelings, all caps.
Yep,
oh my God, feelings, January, there's so many feelings. Yes.
So. Yeah, pretty much.
I know exactly where that is, too.
Yeah, we all know exactly where that is.
Okay, so episode 7, Refraction. It's based around the parent-teacher conferences, which turns into basically an unofficial pride meeting, where major plot points in there involve the Robert Minor Janet Stein affair appears to be now over, and Janet has gone back to her husband, and Robert is kind of left, I guess, going back to his estranged wife because he's got nowhere else to go. Frank Dean continues to go ahead and get some of the memories back that he was getting at the gala. My big note was that it was the awkwardest parent-teacher conference ever. We also see Victor Stein come down hard from the Jonah drug.
Yeah,
we all thought that he was taking a turn for the better, and then all of a sudden,
I didn't think he was.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all kind of knew that it was coming, and it was only a matter of when. But for a second there, it seemed like it was a genuine turn for the better. And so did Chase, and that got him a fistagon in the face. Spoiler alert. Also, major plot point in that episode that I completely forgot to put in there is that the time machine works.
Right. Oh, that's right, because that's the episode that starts out with him seeing the message that says, "Don't put the cuffs on, Dad." Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it is a message from Chase, who is looking very distinguished in a shirt and tie and glasses with a tiny bit of goatee. Not like I noticed these things on the second time around. Why do you ask? warning his father, don't put on the fistigons, and we're sitting there wondering, like, when's he going to do it? When's he going to do it? And then yeah, he puts on the fisticuffs and decides to go ahead and beat up on his son, which promptly gets him shot in the shoulder by his wife, who suddenly decided to go and grow a backbone.
I have to say, one of my favorite moments of the series.
You just sort of see him get shot.
Watching your precious James Marsters get shot in the back.
Well, watching, there's a certain justice for me in watching abused women sort of, especially emotionally abused women, kind of bounce back.
Oh, yeah. She's emotionally, mentally, physically. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Like, you know, you name it, she's got it.
Yeah. Yep.
So this leads into episode 8, Tsunami, which picks up right where episode 7 leaves off, where they have a bleeding out Spike on Victor Stein on the floor.
Yeah, Spike wouldn't be bleeding.
Yeah. Spike would just get up and, like, bite you because he doesn't care.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Anyways, sorry, that was really funny. He's bleeding out on the floor. There's a whole bunch of brilliant minds around him, and no one thinks to go ahead and just, like, sit him up to patch the bleeding and to stop it from happening. But I digress. Pride all gets together to try to save him. Jonah shows up because, of course, he does, and they are presented with the ultimate question, like, Victor needs to be alive for the next phase of the plan to start rolling. And he offers them, like, someone get in the other box. We'll go ahead and we'll use a human sacrifice to revive Victor, because Victor is now dead. Mm-hmm. He died during the course of the episode in a very traumatic, death seizure kind of thing, where he almost broke his wife's hand again. It was weird.
Well, when Frank was trying to heal him. So Frank has these funky gloves that give him, like, healing powers. And so he puts those on because Leslie doesn't call Jonah, even though it's this big mess.
Yep.
She calls Frank thinking, oh, we'll slip this one under the radar.
Yep.
That works.
Yep. And
they
reveal through a tiny, like, little throwaway piece of dialogue that Frank used to be part of Pride, but he no longer.
And they wiped his memories somehow.
Yep, they wiped his memories with the shot that Catherine was going to give Molly earlier in episode 4 or something like that.
Yeah.
So they eventually are all arguing. They kind of, you know, go Clue on each other, where it's basically a comedy of errors trying to figure out who's doing what and who's going to go ahead and get in the box, and they're all arguing for their own relevance.
Who's the most guilty?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I'm half expecting Tim Curry to just walk in at some point.
Yeah.
Just be like, I did it. Robert Minoru ultimately tricks Tina into letting him go in there, but then Tina destroys one of the boxes, so now Victor is just kind of shunted off somewhere. He's dead but stabilized.
Well, he's in, like, some stasis or something like that. Like,
conveniently in some stasis that the box can give him.
Right. Okay.
But
to hold him so he's not quite decomposing yet, even though he's not alive.
Yeah. But in the midst of all of that happening, we also have stuff happening with our main characters too.
Right.
Which is hilarious. Mostly that Alex is revealing the circumstances surrounding Amy Minoru's death. It is revealed that he knew a lot more about Amy's death than he ever really let on. It is presumed that Amy discovered the Pride secret. She had hacked her mother's computer or hacked the Wizard server, and Wizard server had hacked her back. It's presumed that, you know, she discovered Pride, otherwise she would not have been set up to see a suicide. To the point where, like, Tina's assassin Kincaid is trying to talk to her. When an assassin is trying to go ahead and talk you into the correct course of action, you know that you've messed up somewhere. I just want to throw that out there.
Not a good place to be.
Yeah, pretty much. Let me see here. And it is also implied that Alex discovered Tina's password from Amy, that's how he knew how to go ahead and break in at the Gala Night. They never explicitly say that, but it is implied that that's how he knew. Let me see here. And then Alex finally decrypts the Pride video. Chase goes ahead and smashes it because he wants that one last connection with his father. Despite the fact that he just got punched in the face with Fistigons, he still wants to go ahead and have that connection with his father. And he doesn't want to ruin whatever budding stupid messed up relationship he's got with him. Goodness gracious.
Meanwhile,
Molly is sent to live with her second cousin, Graciela, who may as well just be an aunt at this point. And she is discovered to have a key that was left by her parents, which...
Well, she doesn't have a key, technically. She has... Oh, wait, no, she does have a key.
She does have the key.
She does have a key. She had a letter to her. Yeah, she had a letter. Didn't know it was a key necessarily because it was still sealed.
Yep.
But right. Yeah. I thought the key for a minute. I thought the key was in the stuffed animal. I got confused because wait, wasn't it though? Because didn't it say something like
it was?
Yeah, it was in the stuffed animal. The key was in the stuffed animal. She had the key with her the whole time.
It was. Yeah, it was. Letter find Elyon. Yeah.
Yeah, find Elyon, and then the key was in the stuffed animal. Okay, good.
The stuffed animal. Leads to a hidden locker at a bus station or something, and there's a videotape in there, and she has this wonderful millennial moment of like, what is this?
What is this thing?
I don't know how this works. And then Doomsday happened, episode 9. Goodness gracious, there's so much that happens, and I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm rambling. Hernandez's death is finally revealed. I'm really excited that we actually get to meet these characters, and they're not just shrouded in mystery. It turns out that they're geologists, and they were... They discovered a fault line that the dig site is on, and that if the drill ends up happening, there's going to be an earthquake, which is going to basically sink Los Angeles, which is something that we saw in the Time Machine last episode. An image of Los Angeles burning to the ground, and buildings falling over. The alien rock samples are basically like breathing, for lack of a better word.
They're kind of like in a state of quantum flux. Like they're not exactly real.
Yeah, they kind of move and kind of like pieces in and out. And there's light that emits from them.
Yeah, there's light that emits from them. They're bioluminescent.
The awesome. The effects of those rocks were awesome.
Oh yeah, it was great. Yeah, and Molly is of course just kind of sitting around there. She's a 3-4-year-old girl. She has no idea what's going on, and
keeps poking at one.
She keeps poking at it, and she's like, hello, happy, because that's what toddlers do. You know this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the shoe drops, and they are locked into their building, while Leslie Dean goes ahead and throws a bomb through the window, and they are all dead, except for Molly, who was hugging a big rock, and... then her eyes glow yellow, her trademark yellow, and that is how she gets her powers, because she can't be a mutant in this show, because Fox still owns the rights to the mutants.
Not anymore, though. Disney owns Fox now.
Well, yes, but this show was beyond.
Not like a couple months ago. That was
exactly. Molly ends up playing the videotape where the parents... tell her everything that I just told you. The kids go to a dance after... sorry, Regina, I'm going to swear. After Gert goes ahead and calls Eiffel a hateful bitch, it just made me so happy that somebody actually said that to her. Thank God.
That was kind of an awesome moment.
It was fantastic.
They're all going, you hateful bitch. Man, there's so many times in high school I would have loved to have done something like that. Oh, like wish fulfillment.
I know. So they all go to the dance undercover. Oh, by the way, Nico and Alex are no longer talking because she's very upset that he kept all these secrets from her on top of not going to her sister's funeral and, you know, just being a general... you know, jerk. Yeah. And then there are feelings that are happening.
Gert and Chase finally
get together and make love in like the school locker room or something like that. It's quite romantic. It's, you know, great. You know, teenagers, of course.
Romantic? I don't think that word means what you think it means.
I mean, in varying senses of the word romantic. And then they have this wonderful little exchange about it later where That was hilarious. They both clearly are just like, well, doesn't it want this? Oh God, what's going on? And they're just like, oh yeah, right. It was totally just
only
a one-time
happened
thing.
An hour ago.
It was just wonderful. But more importantly, Caroline and Nico finally decided to go ahead and kiss, and Nico looked like she was kind of into it. I'm really excited. I want them to be a couple. Please just be a couple, because they never were in the comics, and I'm so sad. Sorry, spoiler alert, Regina.
I was going to add, there are a couple things I was going to ask about, I was going to ask if Chase and Gert get together in the comics, and if
they do,
Yeah. Okay. So I wasn't sure. And I wasn't sure if the, Carolina mm-hmm. and Nico either, but,
Carolina and Nico, the topic is broached in the comics, but nothing ever comes of it.
Okay. Okay. Because I think we were kind of surprised, or your responses were kind of surprised at Carolina kind of loosely coming out in the last episode, where it was like, oh, well, mm-hmm. or the last, when we were talking in our last episode, before we kind of figured that out. So.
Oh my God. I was so excited.
Yeah.
I was so, so, so excited. So after that happens, they go to the construction site. They decide that they're just going to go ahead and, they've also decided they formed a loose plan to run away at this point, because Nico said, does anybody
suggested calling themselves runaways?
I know. And then Nico was just like, that's so dark even for me. Yep. They suggested, going abroad, because now the secret's out. Everybody knows that Molly knows, and that Molly told all of her friends. So it is no longer safe for the kids to be around their parents, because they are unsure what is happening, and they are unsure of what the motives are of Jonah and or their parents. And it ends with a setup to a giant fight scene. And I was sitting there like, yes, there's going to be a fight scene. And then the end credits.
And then it ended. Yeah, I know. I was so mad.
I don't even think we're going to get a fight scene.
Damn you, Brian K. Vaughan.
It makes me so sad.
I don't think we're going to get a fight scene next episode either. It's going to be something that happens, and they're just going to end up like kind of going off.
Oh my God. It made me sad. And then there was that one thing that happened at the end of the fight scene, or near the end of the fight, or the end of the setup to the fight scene, where Carolina, she takes off the church razor, she throws it on the ground, and she starts glowing, and all the parents are just like, what? and they go to Leslie, like, did you know about this? And she was like, no, but I was afraid of it. And I was like, oh God, this is gonna be fantastic. Anyways, I feel like it took up a lot of time, but I promised that was about the shortest that I could do it in.
Too bad. I'm at 15 minutes. That's not bad for covering the major plot points of three episodes.
Yeah. Hey, that's 5 minutes an episode.
So much happened in the last one.
Yeah, so much happened in the last one. So.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Anyways, so now that we're done with the plot summation, thank goodness, I guess one of the interesting pieces for me for the last few episodes was the dichotomy about how our two groups of characters deal with friction and conflict, where the parents are very much about working clandestinely and in the shadows, and let's keep everything on a need to know basis, where the children are for the most part just quite brutally honest with each other.
Yeah.
For better, for worse. And it affects their relationships in gargantuanly different ways, because we see both groups still falling apart, despite the fact that one group is hell-bent on lying to each other, and the other group is hell-bent on just on exposing everything, and they're still mad at each other anyway. I thought that there was a fantastic dichotomy, and I wanted to know if any of you picked up on that, and or what your thoughts are on those things.
I noticed that there was a lot of lying among the parents, and I thought that was really interesting. And I think part of that is sort of inspired by the fact that they were all tricked into Jonah's plan. At least all of them except Nico's mom, I think. I think she had a pretty clear idea of what was going on, but I think she was the only one, it seemed, who knew what she was signing up for, because wasn't she the one that said, why do you think that Jonah gave you guys all the things he gave you?
Something like that, yeah.
Something to that effect. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they all kind of operate as like little pockets within Pride of kind of doing their own thing. And sometimes, and their allegiances will shift. Like sometimes they'll be, oh, okay, we can kind of help each other.
Yeah.
And then, oh, but now I can't trust this person because they did this, and me trusting them led to that. And it's just kind of this like, oh, it's just so messy.
Yeah. So, yeah. They even said, you know, like even the Hernandezes and the Yorks, who were apparently very good friends, didn't trust the Yorks with the information that Molly ended up receiving.
Yeah.
Because
that
they
whole conversation just cracked me up, because they were like, they knew we wouldn't do it, but they wanted us to, but they knew we weren't going to. Like,
no, yeah, of course. You know, kids, this is why you don't get in with the mob. Just say no.
Okay. We even got some kind of hints of like factions happening, like where it seems like there's like we got kind of like a hint that there's sort of a plot within the plot where some of the parents are getting together. I know it was the Yorks and I think the Wilders. I can't remember, but they like, you got the idea that they were intentionally keeping a sort of a secondary plot secret amongst them, that they were trying to keep the rest of them, and especially what's his name? Jonah, from being able to figure out what they were doing.
Yeah,
they were on agenda.
Yeah, they were all trying to protect Molly, because, you know, of course it was the Wilders that found out that that Molly discovered their secrets. They tell the Yorkses because, of course, they have to tell the Yorkses because she's under their legal care, and all four of them agree, like, no, yeah, like if this gets out, like Jonah's going to execute her, you know, and that's even if she gets that far, because God knows what Tina's going to do to her. They specifically mention Tina by name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but frankly, like after knowing that that Leslie Dean is perfectly capable of throwing a pipe bomb into somebody's window on Saturday night and then going to church on Sunday morning.
Well, and knowing that there was a child in that building, like,
oh yeah, like I am officially now more scared of Leslie Dean than I am of Tina Minoru.
Yeah,
because
she's
like
terrifying, and she doesn't feel the need to put her hard hat on when she's on the construction scene.
That annoyed the giant tar out of me.
I know, me too.
That was so annoying.
Their hard hats in general annoyed me because they were all wearing them wrong, and I know they were wearing them wrong for like because they, you know, they had them like so high up on their head. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if anybody noticed this, but they were all like kind of teetered to the side, and I'm like, you know, your hard hat is supposed to protect your head. It's not supposed to be like.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be a
graduation cap. Yeah.
<You know?
laughs> What are you doing?
Yep.
And then she's holding hers, and I'm like, yeah, there's a giant drill, like, literally above your head, and you're going to be holding your hat. Come on.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Can we also nitpick about just, like, one other small thing in that scene? That they dismiss everybody from Jeffrey Wilder's construction firm to hire the Church of the Gaborim to run security, because when you think of rough and tumble people who can do security, you think of church patrons, right? I mean, I have no clue why they would.
Scientology church patrons are a little different,
I guess, but
yeah, it was more for me that it, you know, I feel like they've all had the Kool-Aid, like, so I feel like they can manipulate them on what they like change.
Yeah, like that guy, what's his name, Mark or whatever.
Jonah?
No, Leslie's like head lackey guy who's always like hanging around.
I'm calling him George because I forget his name every single time.
He's like a Mark to me.
Hey, Mark, George, it all works. So anyway, just apologies to any Marks or Georges who are watching this.
But yeah, he's definitely, something's off with him. He's definitely drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, they all have that, like, that culty, and I'm sure it's, you know, exaggerated for effect, but they all have that culty, like, you know, we're all doing this for the greater good, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like what they're thinking, at least, is if they do see anything that they're not supposed to, they can, you know, book of Gor, what is it? Goram?
Of Gaborim.
Gaborim it away. Like, oh, this is this prophecy coming true, or this is this happening, because they've already got them so far into believing that they'll just take them down the rest of the road.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
The only part of that that I found kind of confusing is, like, the whole point of having the Wilder construction firm put this up seemed to be as a front for a legitimate enterprise. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, that legitimate enterprise has just been randomly taken over by some church that's not associated with what they're doing.
I know, I thought that.
How does that look to the outside world?
Yep.
Like, okay, I guess this is a church now instead of a school or whatever. Like, that just happened.
Yeah, that I thought about that too, especially because Jeffrey comes back and he's like, this is my neighborhood. Like, this, you know, the whole reason why I'm doing this is because this is my area. Like, you can't just take it away. And he's like, we need better security now and we need to be protected. And it's like,
it's weird. I mean, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it implies that Jonah knows that, like, this neighborhood just ain't going to be around that much longer. Like, he's not worried about a PR nightmare or something like that, because he knows that this school is not going up. He knows that he is down there mining for something, and when he gets it, like, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about the PR fallout. He doesn't care about how it looks to the, you know, to anybody else. He just cares that he wants to get down to the earth, apparently find his squishy rocks or whatever, and get out and do whatever he's got to do.
Well, it makes me wonder if he even knows about the rocks. Like, I don't know. I just feel like I feel like the rocks were the MacGuffin. Like there's something else that the rocks were protecting. That is what he's trying to get at.
Yeah,
I mean, the rocks were like some kind of a side effect of something else.
Yes. Whatever the big thing is that he wants, they're
just me, or do the rocks remind you of the, like, box things that he had?
Little bit.
Resurrection box or whatever.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the glowy. You know, all the glowy things kind of feel connected to me in some ways. Like, when Leslie is having sex with Jonah, how they glow. And
yeah, that's just how, so weird.
I know. Yeah, and how Frank's hands glow with whatever fake healing powers he's been given. The rocks glow. Carolina glows. Like,
The staff has
a glow. The serum that they use to treat Spike. I did that on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
The Jonah juice. They
literally called it Jonah juice, and I laughed out loud.
Yeah, like, that glows. It's all, whatever it is, you can't overlook that connection. Like, they all have to be connected in some way.
No, of course, yeah.
But the rocks do look different enough that I think they could be something completely separate, because it's not just they glow, it's they do that shifting.
They do that shifting and
nothing
moving.
Else we've seen has done anything like that.
Yeah.
Except for the boxes they go in, sort of, but
kind of
more technological.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that I'm thinking about the rocks is that, well, they confirmed, Leslie and Frank had a conversation affirming that Jonah is one of the, like, beings who saw the full spectrum. Their words, not mine. That was referenced in the Book of Gaborim. Jonah is clearly, like, we know this, like, clearly not human, but Leslie and Frank believe that he is some sort of divine being. I mean, I think that he's probably some sort of just, like, alien who just kind of happened around and, you know, proclaimed himself like a god because he's so far above these mortals, and I feel like he's, like, looking for his spaceship. Like, I'm just gonna laugh if all of this is so he can get in his spaceship and go home.
That would be funny.
I don't think that's confirmed, though. I'm not sold that that's not Leslie trying to give a simpler explanation to Frank because she's still not letting him in all the way.
I mean,
think she's trying to feed him a lie he'll believe more likely than the truth that he won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Leslie would do that because she's, Izzy wanted to go
to
this question in here. Izzy wanted to put this question in here. Like, Leslie Deed, is she a cold-blooded murderer, high-functioning sociopath, woman on a mission, or all three?
Yes.
I mean, the answer is absolutely that, Evan. It is yes. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, Izzy, since you wanted to go ahead and bring up this conversation, like,
yeah.
Like, what about Leslie Deed?
That was one of your notes, so it's just Leslie with exclamation points. So,
well, I didn't want to give it away to Evan, who was still watching the episode. So it was mostly just like, I was not expecting that to happen.
The whole pipe bomb thing, I was just like, nope.
fully expected them to, or one of them, whoever was behind it, to use.
Mm-hmm.
Like a middleman of some kind, and I thought for sure it was the
assassin
guy.
Yeah.
And no, she did it herself somehow. I don't know where Leslie Deed acquired a pipe bomb, but sure.
I mean, she's got
the storage of the church.
Yeah, of course.
Sure, you know, happened to be there.
That's a tax write-off. I mean, don't forget. Also, she was in conspiracy with Tina Minoru. She was on the phone with her like 3 seconds after it happened.
Tina
Minoru also signed off on this whole project. Tina Minoru employs Kincaid. I find it extraordinarily reasonable to believe Tina's just like, hey, Kincaid, I need a pipe bomb. Why? No reason. Just give it to me. Here, Leslie, I found a pipe bomb.
And do we have an explanation as to how, like, they would have eventually have found Molly, because Molly gets adopted by Gert's parents. So, like, what explanation did they have for the fact that she survived?
Reasons?
Yeah, like being in the explosion, because nobody knows the power she has.
Now they do.
I mean, yeah, but I mean...
She was under a table!
Yeah, she was under a table. Like, I mean, I feel like they may have been able to say, like, she was under a table in a different room than the explosion happened.
Yeah.
So maybe she just got lucky. Because, like, she was under, like, the one thing that seemed to still be standing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, whether or not that was her holding it up or was the rock being like, no, don't fall on me. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting to think about. I don't know. It seemed complicated, very convoluted to me that, you know, they tried to kill them and then the little girl survived and then nobody did any research to figure out why.
I think we'll see more about that.
Yeah.
I don't think we're done with that plot thread yet.
No, probably not.
I mean, considering how much this series tries to cram into one episode every single time,
moved faster the rest of the show. Just saying.
I mean, that was another thing that I wanted to chat about. Like, how about that pacing? You know, is it better now, or do we still feel like we've got an insurmountable challenge to wrap up everything in just 47 more minutes?
Yeah, I didn't feel bad. Well, I've been the one person, because I'm the least familiar with the story, although that's going to change, as you guys can see. Somebody was kind enough and gave me Runaways for Christmas. Thank you, Dante.
No problem.
Since I'm not familiar with the story and I didn't have the expectations that you guys had going in, I didn't feel like the pacing was particularly off. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that it did kind of move slowly, because I feel like the character development was pretty solid leading into all the action that we're getting into now. And that's often a complaint I have about stories that move too fast through character development. So I'm glad that they didn't do that for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, I feel less like the pacing is an issue. I think they do have a lot to wrap up in the next episode, in the finale. I'm curious, though, and this is kind of tangential to what we're talking about right now, but I'm curious about how you guys are feeling as the readers of our analysis here about how prominent the parent stories are, because I feel like, you know, it really has taken over in some aspects, and I can't tell if that's just I'm so fond of some of the actors that I'm really into those storylines, and I'm less into the Runaways storylines than I think I would have been maybe if I'd known the source material. I don't know. I was just wondering what you guys kind of thought about that, because we had talked about it before that there was a lot more story, that they were just sort of evil, you know, caricatures in the book.
Yeah.
And so now they're like fleshed out, like plot, you know, sociopaths and murderers and, you know,
willing to do whatever they,
they have flaws and we like them in some aspects and we hate them in others. So anyway, just wondering what you guys are thinking about that.
That's a spectacular question. Does somebody else want to go first? I'm willing to give someone else the opportunity to go first because I have a lot of feelings.
I've been sort of feeling like that this time. Like I feel like I mentioned it here and there that I think that we are seeing too much of the sympathetic side of the parents, and I think part of that's just from seeing them so much. So it's kind of a complaint, but also a compliment, because I feel like they've characterized these characters to the point where they feel like people like emotionally bond with them and feel like they deserve their own stories to be told, but it's also making it harder to hate them, and I want to hate them, and I feel like in order to properly bond with the kids, I need to hate them. But I think we're finally starting to get there, because we're starting to see the parents do some really jacked up stuff.
Right, like, and starting to make decisions that are very much against the kids,
And against each other. Like, we're starting to see some real bad sides to all of them that is like, all be parties to murder before, which should be enough, but it kind of isn't. Like, now we're starting to see them, like, turn on each other. And we're starting to see them, like, show their true sides. Like, one of the parts that I liked in, I think it was the episode 8, was the part where Dale is, where they're all, like, talking about who should do it, and Dale's like, honestly, it should really just be Tina. She's kind of a jerk. And it's just like, it was so like, threw her just all the way under the bus without any pretense. It's just like, if anybody's going to die, should be that chick. She scares me. And it's just like, it was so like, all these people are willingly saying right in front of each other, which one should die, which one should be murdered. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they don't have any qualms about throwing each other under the bus. So that was like, that's the kind of thing I wanted to see more of.
Mm-hmm.
Just this kind of self-interest motivated kind of like villainy, for lack of a better word. And I'm glad we're finally starting to be able to see that. Plus, like, them actually starting to be like more aggressive with one another too. Like, in terms of like actually like shooting each other and...
Oh, yeah. Like Dale pulled a gun on someone. That was great.
That was hilarious. He's like,
oh my God, that is
that now. Thank you. He's like, oh God, thank you. Or just drop it. And he tells him to drop it, and he drops it, and it goes off. And I'm like, oh my God, really?
And then Jeffrey just falls out. And he's like, who does that?
Yeah, who does that?
And even his wife is sitting there in the background just like, oh God, why would you do that? It's fantastic. Oh God, it was wonderful. I think my favorite moment of that entire exchange was when Janet started it off, being like, why don't we just kill Dale? What's Dale ever done? Like, come on.
Like plan 8?
Yeah. I was like, listen, Jana, like, you know that you are, like, she's clearly the weakest link. Goodbye. You know?
Yeah.
But anyways, like, yeah, I mean, I have...
Oh, wait, let's get Isabella before.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
What am I answering? Now we've gotten so far away from the original question.
I don't know
where we are right now.
Oh, about the parental plot sort of taking over.
Right.
And how you feel about that?
Yeah, I do feel like we're trying to be too sympathetic when really they are just supposed to be the big bad. Like, even after, especially like, Janet, after everything they've been through, she's like, no, just don't question it. Don't cross these people. or bad things will happen. Like, she knows she's stuck. Like, she can't do anything. But I feel like we're still trying to be too sympathetic. Like, they are nothing but villains at this point.
Right.
Like, they're right. All complicit at this point.
Yeah.
It's been 15 years of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and 15 sacrifices, and technically more than 15 sacrifices, because the botched first sacrifice at the start of the season, she still ends up dead. She just ended up not sacrificed.
Yeah, she ended up
with they may or may not know that they're going to destroy the entire city.
Right, yeah. They might actually know the risk and be willing to take the risk to do this, too.
Some of them at least do.
Yeah, exactly.
At the very least, Tina and Leslie know. The Hernandezes were going to tell the Yorks, but obviously Pipe Bomb kind of interfered with that.
Right.
So that's
Jonah knows for sure.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Jonah knows. Like, Jonah's a sociopath. I mean, like, that's just evidence.
I think it's interesting. Like, you were talking about him maybe being like some sort of alien, and and he could be, but I just I see the face of a devil.
Oh yeah, like the minute he walked in the room, I was sitting there just like, you're clearly evil.
Yeah, like that, you know, when you see I'm trying to think of like a movie where we had a representation of this is old and I'm probably the only person who's seen it. There's a movie called, is it Jacob's Ladder? No. Yeah, I can't remember. It's not Jacob's Ladder. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, Robert De Niro is the devil in a movie. And has this scene where he, it's Angel Heart. Angel Heart is what I'm thinking of. And he has this scene where he peels an egg, a hard-boiled egg, while he's talking to the person who essentially has already sold his soul, but is unaware that he sold his soul.
Oh, wow.
And he has this scene where he's just got this charisma coming out his ears, and he's peeling this egg, and he's essentially telling this guy, you know, you're going to die because you already gave me your soul and you're up, you know, your number's up, but he doesn't know it. And he's sending him on this wild goose chase because he's a PI and he's going to eventually discover that he's the one who needs to die. But he's going through the scene where he's peeling this egg and he's like essentially telling him that he's the egg that's going to be, you know, destroyed. And I always think of that scene every time Jonah comes on the screen, because it's like, you are the devil. Like, you're not just like some bad guy or some alien. Like, you are the devil.
Yeah. So
he's basically filling that kind of a role. Like,
that kind of like charismatic,
tremendous power, but at a horrible cost. And
yes. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
he actually
demands human sacrifice.
Yes. Yep.
Really reminds me of the devil in Reaper. I don't know if anyone saw that.
Yes, Reaper.
But he's
that's
like
another
super
one.
Charismatic and just like,
who's the actor who does that?
I don't know.
I'm gonna have to look it up. But he's got the smile and the like.
He's also like super tan and just
the
like,
super tan. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm not ashamed to admit that I was looking up Robert De Niro GIFs, and I saw a GIF where he's doing this thing with the egg. I'm sitting there like, oh wow, like you are hamming this up, aren't you?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was yes.
Anyways.
It's Ray Wise. Ray Wise plays the devil in Reaper.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
yeah, it acts like a younger version, slightly less hammy version of that character.
Mm-hmm.
I gotcha. So, all right. So I have feelings. I have a lot of feelings.
Yes, we've got many more feelings to get through.
Okay. With regards to the parents, the parents plot again, it's somebody who has read this comic a bunch of times, I'm still very excited to see what the parents are doing, to see who the parents are. Because again, like they were like we've said before on this episode and on many other episodes, they existed as caricatures of themselves. They, you know, we had mad scientists, time travelers, wizards, gangsters, and other folks, evil mutants. So we can't say mutants on Fox or Hulu. but you know, and the important distinction that I have to make in my head is that Runaways was initially conceived as A, a coming of age story, but B, it was also supposed to be a kind of a critique or a send up of superhero comics. And it read very much like a superhero comic. Regina, like you'll see this when you go through the first six issues, mm-hmm. Which are collected in that trade, it basically is a superhero origin story. Like the entire first season of this takes place over a couple of weeks, which they mentioned in Doomsday. The first, from discovering the plot to them running away takes like two or three nights at most. They rush through it because the initial run for Runaways was only 18 issues. The first six issues, that's a third of their run dedicated to an origin story. And they had to fit a lot of stuff into a very small amount of time. It was, 22 pages to a comic, 18 issues, that's not that much time. So the parents needed to necessarily be just those archetypal, like, we are straight up evil. Nico's parents literally tried to stab her with the staff. Like, they turned it upside down and they're just like, ah, we're gonna go stab you with it. And then stuff happened. You'll see what happens. Jeffrey Wilder walked into his son's room like with a giant knife behind his back because that's just what Jeffrey Wilder does in the comics. Like they made absolutely no qualms. Like, these people are villains. These kids are heroes. And I think it was simply because they didn't have, they didn't have the time, the resources, or anything like that. Like, they didn't know how long this series was going to be. If this series had been published on an independent, like, Image or something like that, maybe that would have been different, but it's published by Marvel, so they had to go ahead and subscribe to the Marvel way. Seeing all of these characters take on different lives and different roles has been absolutely spectacular for me as a fan. We're all well-read enough to know that the best villains are the ones who are convinced that they are doing the right thing. Or the most dangerous. Like, and we've got plenty of those villains. Like, that is why, like, that's why Tina and Leslie are such powerful villains. Because they are both convinced that they are doing the correct thing. And they even said it in the lead up to the fight scene, to the cliffhanger for the fight scene, that everything that they have done, every sacrifice that they have made, literal and figurative, has been for their children. And it's all because they love them. And I like that we as an audience are feeling as conflicted as the kids are. Because we've got people like Alex and Gert who are kind of like paralleling what Evan's saying. It's like these parents are evil. We should treat them as evil and damn the consequences. And then you've got folks like Chase who are feeling quite conflicted. It's like, yes, my dad's evil, but he's got some of these redeeming qualities. Carolina is trying, is struggling with that inside of herself. So is Molly, I was going to say somebody. I think it was Nico. I might have said that again, but I really like that we are, you know, that that we are empathize. At least for me, I am forced to empathize with the children through my own trying to reconcile what I'm feeling about all of these nine parents, who are around and involved with it. The parents are getting a lot more screen time than I initially expected, but it is giving me a deeper appreciation for just how messed up, you know, these characters are, and it gives me a greater level of appreciation for what they are, for what they are experiencing. Sure, like, they're fictional characters, but
we're still watching their evolution.
I'm still watching their evolution. I am watching all of them, including, you know, naive, young, optimistic Molly, not pessimistic Molly. super optimistic Molly. Like, I am watching all of these people get jaded and grow up extraordinarily quick in front of my eyes. It's wonderful, and I don't think that we would have had such great emotional impact if it was just a standard, like, we're all gangsters, we all know what we were doing, and none of us are conflicted about it, because at that point, like, you get Thor 2, The Dark World, you know, where it's just, or really, like, any other Marvel movie that isn't, you know, that isn't, or Marvel movie villain that isn't Loki, you know, like, you've got, you know, where you've got the one person who comes in and is like, I want to destroy things because I'm evil, and because, you know, reasons, and I'm evil. Like, those are forgettable popcorn villains. You know, like, we all love Guardians of the Galaxy, but let's be real here. You know, Ronan the Accuser was not exactly the most compelling villain. The rest of the movie was great despite him, and I'm glad that Runaways is trying to at least break the mold. They are giving us something that most Marvel movie villains can't give us, and, you know, like, sure, they might be taking up a little bit more screen time, but I'm perfectly okay with it because I don't think that these parents are going to be around for much longer.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how I felt as the outsider to the original material. Mm-hmm. I've really appreciated having the depth of character with the parents. And like I said back in an earlier episode, you know, it will make the split harder for us to experience, where if we would have experienced it in the first episode, mm-hmm. Where they just took off, or the second episode where they took off that quickly, I don't know that we would have appreciated, like you said, the depth of emotion that's going to kind of go through this mm-hmm. experience, like we're going to see now.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, like, you know, yeah, like, folks can criticize it all they want, but
yeah,
like,
well, I'm sure everybody will, because you always have, you know, as I have my own purist, I have my own purist leanings. So I can't say I don't empathize with people who really want things to reflect the source material or the original materials that something might be made from.
I like the multi-dimensionality of it. I just wish, like we're finally getting to it now, but up until this point, I felt like it was almost confusing to a degree how relatable the parents were, because, like, you knew they killed people, but it was also kind of downplayed that they killed people. And it was like, most of them killed people because they had to, or because they were forced to in some way.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't feel like they did it because they chose to, even though, like, you're kind of learning they did, but it was still always kind of like, how into this whole thing are they really? And that for me kind of helped to diminish their effectiveness as antagonists. And half of them still don't seem like antagonists, but I think that's okay to have a few that don't seem to be and a few more that are. But for me, the biggest problem was not so much that, but, like, ultimately, I feel like the story should be about the kids, like, unambiguously. Mm-hmm. Like, it's good to develop the parents and to show kind of their greater storyline, and I do like that they've expanded on that. You do get some detail in the parents in the comics too, and some of them are more sympathetic than others, and some of them do seem to genuinely care about their kids.
Mm-hmm.
But like I do kind of like that they've expanded on that, but I worry that they do it to such an extent that it takes the spotlight off the people who should have the spotlight, being the kids.
Interesting. Well, I just looked because I was curious to see if they had decided if there was going to be another season. Because
is there?
There is. Yes, it was announced today.
Good.
So Marvel Runaways season 2, reportedly ordered by Hulu, was just reported on Screen Rant today. Apparently, this is kind of a not official announcement necessarily, but it does look like it's going to be a second season, which makes me wonder if they were kind of planning that a little bit, and that's why they've let the buildup in this season be,
risky.
It is absolutely.
Oh yeah,
risky.
It was a big gamble.
Yeah.
Because it could have been Firefly.
So they must have been anticipating that the primary audience or a good portion of the audience were going to be people who are not familiar with the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, my experience has been completely different from you guys, where I haven't had a problem with the way things have been evolving because I don't know how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So if they're assuming, if Hulu is going into this, assuming that their audience is not going to be familiar with the source material, then they would be more open to this kind of an evolution. So, that's good. I'm glad. And we will cover season 2 of Runaways when it comes out.
Oh, yes, we will.
We're all in love with this.
So I was just looking at this. I was looking at the Wikipedia article, and I don't know how I missed this before now, and I don't think we've covered it at all. But the guy who plays Jonah, Julian McMahon, is the guy who played Dr. Doom in the Fantastic Four movies.
No! That is not the same guy!
It's serious? Him.
Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah!
This
no,
is
I'm
great.
Not kidding you. It's him! It's
this
Dr.
is amazing!
Doom.
Oh my god, listen to Dante's voice. It just went up like 4 octaves.
So there's a new theory. Maybe Jonah's really Dr. Doom this whole time.
Oh.
I am so happy that actor finally has a chance to be a real villain in Marvel Comics. seriously, that guy, Julian McMahon, he was literally the only reason that those Fantastic Four movies were even remotely watchable.
He was so much fun. He was not Doctor Doom. He was so much fun.
All right. So he was one of two reasons. The second reason was Chris Evans as the Human Torch. Yeah.
He was perfect as Human Torch.
He was perfect as the Human Torch, and Julian McMahon just like chewing on all the scenery was fantastic. Everybody else was just kind of stiff as a board. I'm so
he was
happy.
On Charmed too. Interesting.
And I believe he was also on Nip/Tuck, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's where I originally know him from.
Yeah.
Yep. So I am.
He plays a complete psychopath on that one. So.
Well, it seems to be his bag.
I guess so. But yeah. Jonah was definitely not Dr. Doom. He was a guy, that was purporting to be Dr. Doom, kind of. I'm so happy that you mentioned that because now I feel like, look at that. It only took 13 years since those movies came out for him to go ahead and get back into the Marvel Universe as an actual real diabolical villain. Like this guy, the Jonah is more Dr. Doom than that other Dr. Doom was.
I mean, if you think of him as Dr. Doom, it still makes sense. Like, Jonah is totally, like, I totally buy him as being secretly Dr. Doom this whole time. That's my new fan theory. I'm going with that. Just Dr. Doom.
I mean, Dr. Doom does have precedence of showing up in Runaways. Spoiler alert.
Yes. You
know? Oh.
So maybe.
Maybe.
So.
Did Dr. Doom ever show up, or was it just his Doombots?
I don't know. Regina hasn't read it, so she needs to go ahead and figure that out for herself.
That's true.
See what I did there, Regina?
trying to make sure I get my read on. I got it. Subtle.
All right.
I am still disappointed we haven't had a Kingpin crossover, though. Because like they could have had like Vincent D'Onofrio from like the Daredevil Kingpin.
Oh my god.
Kingpin was huge in Runaways. He was really relevant.
Yep. Oh man.
All right, so I'd just like to review our predictions from our last episode.
Oh yeah, because I was just going to ask you what the predictions were for next episode.
For the next episode. So my prediction was that Molly's flub makes them run away before the end of the season. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much all three of you said it was going to be the last episode of the season they were going to run away, which
it looks like
probably pretty much all agree that that's probably going to happen in our next episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isabella said something bad was going to happen to Frank.
I guess that's not happening now.
No, it looks like he's switched allegiances a little bit.
I wouldn't be surprised if it still did.
Really?
Unless he becomes another like pod person.
I mean,
I
yeah.
I
he's
feel
in
like
league with Jonah
kind of
now.
In a tug of war, where though, I kind of feel like he's sort of being manipulated by both sides at this point,
mm-hmm.
like by all three sides technically, by like Jonah and then everybody else, and then
surprise.
The kids even,
and then the kids, yeah,
like,
yep.
They're all kind of. And I think it's going to go very badly for
him. Oh man. It's going to be great. So what were our other predictions?
Isabella also said that everything ties to the school, which, yeah, we've definitely seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Evan said Frank was going to have an inciting incident that compels everyone forward, that Frank was going to be the reason everybody moved forward in the story.
The catalyst?
I can give you half
exactly
of it. Like, tangentially, it'd be like he technically
have credit for that.
Signed.
Yeah, like I give you half True. Credit for that in terms of, you know, his complexity with Jonah now. Mm-hmm. And Dante. Oh, somebody gets to Molly. I can't read my own handwriting. That's how bad this is. Oh, somebody gets to Molly. I don't remember who. It starts with a C. Carolina, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
Somebody gets to Molly. And then Frank, by episode 8, started conflict to move the story forward, and he'll die. You said he'd die by episode 8.
Darn.
We had lots of predictions that Frank
was almost did
die.
In Doomsday. Like, they tossed up the idea of throwing him into the box, and Leslie was just
that's
like, man, that's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea, yeah.
You know, because she's also a psychopath.
Yes, yes. And she'd have no problem with that whatsoever.
No compunctions. All right. All right, so
those were our predictions.
All right, Regina, what's your final prediction?
They're going to run away.
You're not allowed to choose that one.
I'm not allowed to choose that one.
Obviously, they're going to run away.
I think Nico and Carolina are going to have some sort of deep discussion, and Nico's going to feel conflicted about what happened between them.
I like that.
That's pretty safe, but I think that's...
No,
yeah.
I think that's very probable.
Yeah.
I like it. All right, so, Isabella.
Oh, gosh. There's gonna be a fight scene.
Also, when we cannot, nobody gets to say that one. We all predict that one for our next episode.
I don't even think. No, I'm predicting there won't be.
Okay, you can say that one. I'll give you that one. No fight scene.
No fight scene. I think they got chicken out.
Mm-hmm.
Not the characters. The filmmakers are gonna chicken out. They don't want to film one.
Fine. I guess the kids are going to talk about all the different things that are happening between them, like Gert and Chase, and
all the romantic stuff is going to be brought up.
Okie dokie. I'm pretty excited about that. Okay, my prediction. I'm going to stick with what I was saying earlier in this episode, that we are going to see that Jonah is an alien. Who is masquerading as some sort of divine being on Earth. And I think that zero of the kids are going to die. But, oh man, at least one of the adults is going to die. It just has to happen at this point. At least one of the adults is going to die.
Damn.
And I'm going to put my money on one of the Yorkses.
One of the Yorks. Okay.
I like both of them.
Yeah,
I do too. Like, I don't think it's gonna going to be them, just because we I can't think
have nice things.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to be them. My money's still in Frank. If one of the adults dies, it's my money's still in Frank.
Okay.
Because I think he's, I think Leslie thinks he's gotten too big for his britches with the healing powers. He kind of went behind her back. She's a psychopath.
Yep.
I'm still thinking it's Frank that's going to go. Anybody else for Frank?
Are
we starting with Deadpool?
Yeah.
I will see your Frank, and I will raise you a Leslie Dean.
You think Leslie's going to die?
I think that Jonah will end up killing her, personally.
Oh. Dang.
That would be great.
I mean, he's already pissed off with her, and he has already expressed so much dissatisfaction with how she has organized her house.
Hmm. I don't know. I think he gets a lot.
I think she's tough enough she would handle herself.
Yeah, that too.
Against an alien?
I think she is one too. I think they both are.
That could be.
But we haven't seen anything.
She glows when they have sex. She glows. And Carolina is Jonah's daughter, so I guess.
Then there would be no question.
Yeah.
There would be no question that she was an alien.
Right. Well, then she wouldn't have wondered. Because she said she didn't know for sure if she was going to be able to glow once she took one.
That's why I'm pretty sure she's human.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know. I think it's more when I read that more as like she hadn't expected Carolina knew she was.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think Leslie's. I still think Leslie's human, but.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, I think she's going bye-bye. And I think along with one of the Yorkses, because that would just give us the emotional, just like, oomph, like the right in the feels.
Yeah. That would be like Wash
kicking the dog.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this.
If this was a Joss Whedon show,
I would totally be.
Yeah, if this is a Brian K. Vaughan show, it's close enough.
Yeah, pretty much. I was about to say, clearly, Regina, you have not read Runaways.
No. Have you not read? You definitely haven't read Saga.
And you certainly haven't watched or read Why the Last Man.
Well, you keep scaring me with Saga, Isabella, because you're like, I don't think you're going to like it.
It's been pretty traumatizing.
I mean,
I've stayed away.
It's been pretty emotionally like roller coastery for me, and I'm not a parent. And this is a book about being a parent.
In an actual war zone.
In a literal war zone.
It takes a whopping 10 issues before someone dies. It goes what?
I think it takes a whopping 10 issues before a major character dies.
Okay. Well, have you guys watched The Secret of Nim?
No.
It's like an old kids movie.
A long time ago.
Really long time with the mice and all of the fun stuff.
Yeah, when I was newly a mom and postpartum, which is a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. We started that movie to watch it because Chris like, oh, you like this? Blah blah blah. And the first thing is like the child is sick, and I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot, and it wasn't even any. And he's like, nothing bad happens. I'm like, I don't care. I can't even deal with like a sick child that might die right now. I can't even like think about that. Now I'm not that sensitive now, but close.
So yeah,
maybe I won't be doing that for a while.
I will give you a spoiler about Saga. It's only a tiny spoiler. Is that it is narrated by the child. So no matter how much danger the child is in, you always know that the child is going to survive because the child is narrating.
Oh, okay. Well, okay.
It takes the emotional stakes down just a tiny bit.
Right.
But also, there's a lot of sex and a lot of violence.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. Well, think about it. Geek Embassy Reads Saga.
I will totally go ahead and do that. Absolutely, positively.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Do I get to make a prediction yet?
Oh, yes. I thought you said there was going to be no fight scene. Sorry.
That wasn't my main prediction.
Okay.
Well, what's your other main prediction?
I have several. I think we're going... I don't think we're going to find out immediately. Probably will take them a very long time to get to it. But I think we're going to find out that the thing they're drilling for is the actual Ghiborim. I think it's like a Lovecraftian kind of a thing where it's like this deity, pseudo deity thing that's like just hibernating deep below the earth, and they're trying to contact it.
I like that.
And I do think we're gonna find out that Jonah is an alien. I think he knew about it, and the whole thing is them going
for
like
it,
giving them this technology and stuff like that to help them like acquire this being. I also think this is my big prediction that I think we'll find out that we'll see hinted at the end of this episode. That'll be a big thing over the next season. I don't want to say outright what it is because it's a huge spoiler for the comics, and it's a huge spoiler if it's true for what happens. But I think the thing that happens with Alex in the comics is going to happen or be hinted at happening.
I already know what this is. I saw a spoiler.
So. No! Okay. Yeah. Why would you read that?
I didn't do it on purpose, but... Yeah,
I think that's going to happen, but I'm also tempted to think that just to shake things up, they're going to make it happen to somebody else.
Ooh,
possibly Chase.
That's a thing.
Yeah,
that's certainly a thing.
Prediction. Oh. I don't think anybody's going to die.
Like, please don't let it be Nico. I will quit watching the show if something happens to Nico.
I'm going to flip desks.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay.
Alrighty. I like it.
Yep.
Okay, so I think that just about does it.
I think so, too.
All right.
Do we want to give quick grades, like just overall letter grades, where we think the series is right now? So, like, for everything that we've seen, like, what grade would you give the series up until this penultimate episode before the finale? Isabella?
A-.
A-. Okay. Evan?
I think with this last episode, it's worked its way back up to a solid A again for me.
A, okay. You had it at a B+ last time, so it's definitely...
It was going down as long as they just dragged their feet, and now stuff's finally happening, and I'm back on.
Yep, yep. Dante had A++++++++ last time, so...
I'm only going to give it 7 pluses this time. yeah, it'd be... Having watched the entire series twice through now, I'm still enjoying every single thing, like the writing, the characters, the plot.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody else says about the pacing. I think it's perfectly fine. yeah, my opinion is all that matters to me.
So, well, I will also be giving it a solid A. I think it's definitely held my attention. I like the characters. I like where it's going. I like the way the story is developing. So,
sweet.
Give it an A. All right. So if you're watching or listening, we'd love to hear what you guys think. If you're watching Runaways, hop on over to thegeekembassy.com and let us know in the comments there. Catch us on Twitter at thegeekembassy. And we'd love to know your grade, what you think about Leslie Dean, the parents. What about the romances? Did you have all the feels too? We had all the feels.
I had so many feels.
So many feels. And tune in next week. We will be recording next week for the final episode, episode 10, which is titled, I moved the page. I had it and I looked at something else. And
that's a weird title for an episode.
I know, right? I'm stalling here as I try to get back to where the titles were.
Hostile
is the final episode.
Clever. I'll let you know why it's clever after next week.
After next week. Okay. So Hostile is our season finale, episode 10, which airs on January 9th on Hulu. So thank you for listening. And until next time, don't run away.
Jeez. I love this. I love you so much right now.
So disappointed. That's awesome.